From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on Saturday afternoon at the Central Church of Christ in Rochester. And a number of organizations are coming together to try to offer a unified voice against what they perceive as the hatred and racism from President Donald Trump. As I said at the top of this hour, if someone asks you, is this president racist, you might laugh. And depending on your disposition, you might think, obviously, yes. Or perhaps if you are a supporter of Donald Trump and you would vote for him today, you might think that he is not. There are many instances of what certainly look a lot like racism, and we could talk about those individual instances. But this hour, I want to have a conversation with some of the organizers of the event on Saturday to talk to them about their goals, what they hope to take forward out of this event. They're hoping to bring 1,000 people or more to the rally there. And I want to say hello to the people who have put it together, including Minister Clifford Florence, who is the president of the Faith Community Alliance. Welcome back, Minister. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Larry Knox is a political and community engagement coordinator for 1199 SEIU. There's always an updated title. Is that the correct one, Larry?
This time, yes.
Good enough?
Yep.
Thanks for being here, Larry. Howard Eagle is a representative of the Take It Down Planning Committee and the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry and Action. Howard, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having us.
All right, Minister, 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock this coming Saturday. And why don't you tell me a little bit about how this came together and what the goals are for Saturday?
Well, certainly we want to unite the community. It's a united community response, and we've been working diligently at Fight Village at 186 Ward Street to organize those who want to support the movement, and we're so happy to announce the response that we've received thus far. And it gives us an opportunity just to say to the community, we're looking forward for everyone to join us on Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Central Church of Christ, and that'll be at 1 o'clock. And we want to fill the Central Church of Christ, and we believe that we can come very close, if not beyond, the 1,000 people. And we want to say to our young people, especially those who are voters, that we want to say to our young people that we want you to be with us on Saturday, and we want you to bring your friends to be with us. We're looking for our high school students, our college students to be with us. And certainly it's an opportunity for the community to give a united response where we can stand together. This is what we want to see, and this is what we want to experience. We can make history Saturday by doing something positive that will say to this country and that will say to this community that we stand together on principle and on what is right.
Okay, and that's at 1 o'clock. And where is the church, by the way?
101 South Plymouth Avenue, right across the street from the Public Safety Building. Grace on one side, justice on the other side.
All right, Howard, what do you view the goals as when we go into Saturday afternoon?
Well, if I can, let me talk just briefly about the history of how this came together. A man who is an icon in this community in terms of civil rights and human rights, Franklin Florence Sr., called us together about a month ago. And what he said to us is that we need to join the rest of the nation in terms of taking a united stand, thus the United Community Response, against the vitriol that's coming out of the White House, not only in terms of rhetoric, but especially as it relates to policies and practices, procedures, rules, regulations, and so forth. So we're talking about institutional racism, which, of course, is the most damaging form. So the minister said to us that here in Frederick Douglass City, it would be a shame if we don't join the rest of the nation and people in other parts of the world in terms of taking a stand against what I've just described. And he talks about the fact that this is dangerous. What's happening is dangerous, and that all of this is occurring in the face of massive opposition. So he asked us to imagine what would happen if there was no opposition, what people like the president would do. And he emphasizes, the minister emphasizes this to us, we're not talking about just some ordinary individual. We're talking about the man who calls himself the leader of the free world. And the minister makes the point that damage is being done that it's going to take generations to undo. So his point to us is we need to take a united community stand, response to what's going on. People continue to press and to ask the question almost from the beginning, what next? What will come out of this? What else can we do? And so forth. He has been, the minister, Minister Florence, has been hesitant to answer that question. He's saying, let's first have a successful, united response to what's going on. And then if people really want to commit and continue to do the work, we will consider that. So there will be follow-up and debriefing and so forth after the 17th. But the goal right now is to bring, and we are going to do it, bring people together across every spectrum that you can imagine. To stand, I'll just mention one more thing that the minister says to us. He says, when we first came together about a month ago, and we've been meeting every week since, he said, I don't have any special magic. The magic is when people come together, everybody for the same reason. That's the magic, and that's the magic that we're producing. Right now, we got about 35 various organizations who have endorsed this and who have committed to producing people and so forth. So this is what we're doing.
And Howard, you write often in various platforms about the different layers of racism, the tripartite beast as you see it.
Yes, sir.
And you just referenced institutional racism. My mind goes back to a conversation I had with a high school teacher in a local suburb, a wealthy suburb, that she was referencing a conversation she had with mostly white students who said, well, you know, we don't think racism is sort of a thing anymore. We rarely hear people use personally racist language. And that is an example of personal racism, but you just referenced institutional racism as the most damaging. So for those who kind of go throughout their educational lives, people like me, white kids in the suburbs, aren't taught about sort of those different layers. Why do you view institutional as the most damaging?
Yes, sir, and that's interesting that you would say none of us are really taught about it, which is sort of an indictment of the public education system to an extent, and we need to be taught about it. But when we talk about institutional racism, this is where people have a hard time really understanding. We're talking about policies, practices, procedures, rules, regulations, laws that are utilized by powerful people to oppress, discriminate against, exploit, abuse entire races of people through those policies, practices, procedures, and so forth. That's why we say institutional racism. We're not talking, it's not rhetoric. It's how does the institution function in a way that it disadvantages entire races and gives an advantage to the white race. And so to really understand that, we have to place it in historical perspective. We can't get a clear understanding of it without placing it in historical perspective. But that's an overview of what we're talking about and what we're not taught. Where, in fact, we're often discouraged from learning and what we need to learn. So hopefully, if we are going to have ongoing activity, that will be part of it, the ongoing education that's necessary to help us understand. You made me think about something about the president. I know we don't want to necessarily focus on him. We want to talk about what we're getting ready to do Saturday. But when you get Donald Trump or anybody saying to people in the press, I'm the least racist person that you'll ever meet, that you'll ever interview, we're dealing with pathology. That's clearly not true. That's sickness. That's illness. And to believe that that's true is a form of illness. The minister, Clifford Florence, talks a lot about white pathology that we need to examine and understand as part of institutional racism. So that's a real serious kind of statement to come from the man who's leading the free world.
All right, and so let me turn to Larry Knox, who is a political and community engagement coordinator for 1199 SEIU. You know, some of your work, I think, is really understanding the intersection of policy and politics. And there are going to be listeners, and we encourage, by the way, if our listeners who support this president, voted for this president, would vote again for this president. If you are either sort of confused or disagreeing with that this administration has policies that are racist or hateful, we'd love to hear from you. And you can call the program and join that conversation, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I think I can say factually, I could play a litany of comments that this president has made that are pretty clearly racially tinged on a personal level. But let's talk, based on what Howard is saying, let's look at the structural or institutional racism. And when you talk to, if you've got a Donald Trump supporter in this room saying, I don't see it, Larry, can you point to institutional racism that has come out of this White House?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, one example is just, like, you almost say it every other day, but just earlier in the week, the Attorney General was addressing, I think, a Sheriff's Association. He talked about the Anglo-Saxon backing or the Anglo-Saxon methodology. I can't remember the exact words
he used. The tradition of policing, I think.
Anglo-Saxon tradition of policing, which wasn't in his speech. Like, that was something he decided to add in. And that was kind of a wink and a nod at, yes, there's this Black Lives Matter movement, and yes, there's this pushback against, you know, the minority of police officers, but the ones that, you know, are causing issues and not helping out in the community. And he kind of wanted to, and this is him trying to make his boss happy, the president, do a nod that, listen, I'm going to use a code word, I'm going to use some language that, you know, you guys will understand, that all, you know, many people will understand that I'm on your side, that we're not a part of this or believe in this conversation going on in our country. And, I mean, yeah, you can't just go out and say, I mean, people do this, but, you know, the president or this, you know, the attorney general aren't just going to come out and say, you know, the N-word, you know, publicly, in front of the media. But they can use code words. They can use language. They can, you know, not do actions that show we know where you're at, you know. They can hire people, you know, that are, you know, two or three levels down in the administration that, you know, do online and in their past, you know, use that kind of language, and often caught after they've been hired with proof of them doing that online in other ways. So I think it's very obvious, if you do the research and you look at it, that the language and the actions they take are doing a nod to a certain part of our society that the vast majority of us, Democrat, Republican, white, black, don't accept as people that should be in charge of our country. Yet that's, you know, that hardcore part of his base is who they're acknowledging. And even the whole, you know, and this is kind of a bothersome thing, especially, but, you know, like, you know, Howard and Reverend Florence has said, with Franklin Florence bringing everybody together, you got nuns, churches, community groups, this wide range of folk that are supporting this movement, you know, and a lot of this, especially with the church and Reverend Florence with his history, you know, the morality of where we're at. And it's amazing, and this isn't all evangelical Christians, of course, but it's amazing that, you know, you have President Obama, no matter where he fell on his issues, was an upstanding Christian who had an amazing family, was a great father, an amazing husband, and there's nothing you could say about him, you know, in regards to how he was morally. And you have a president where, you know, not a great husband, not a great father, you know, not a moral standard for our country, and yet there's people that want to look past that and not see that as something that's important for somebody that's leading us or, you know, purporting to lead us. And yet they didn't give President Obama, you know, that same kind of respect or hold him to that same, or, you know, felt that standard doesn't need to be there for President Trump. So for me, for working for members, you know, in our union that are directly affected by the policies of this president and in a negative manner, and directly, and their family members and their neighbors are also directly affected, and they're in a position to be able to fight back to some degree because they're in a union. And but there's a lot of people that, you know, this is an opportunity. If you don't know how to fight back, or if you've seen these other marches that have gone on and you haven't joined in yet and you want to take other action afterwards, you know, to come down to the church on Saturday, you know, take part in this and be able to see what you can do and what your capabilities are and your capacity is to get engaged and to, you know, fight back against what's going on.
All right, Howard.
I just want to jump in and just give another concrete example of institutional racism, because we really need people to understand how it functions. Hopefully this is one that people can relate to, because it happened fairly recently. I think it was around January 11th when the president was meeting with people at the White House, and he made the blank hole
yes.
Comment. And so what he was saying, what he said, is that we need to discourage immigration of people from El Salvador, from Haiti, people from Ghana, and other blank hole countries. We all know that those are countries of color for the most part. And then to really be clear about what he's saying is, he then throws in, we need to encourage immigration from countries like Norway, which is almost a completely white nation, right? So here's the real important factor. He's saying to the people that he's meeting with, people's at the pinnacle of power, we must leave Haitians out of the policy. That's a concrete example of institutional racism. If that happens, you are using a policy, a law, to exclude an entire race of people.
I also want to just say, and I'm going to turn to Reverend Florence for his thoughts on where the institutional racism that he perceives coming out of this administration. But I want to say, in regards to immigration that Howard just referenced there, it probably merits its own separate conversation on this program, because when anybody refers to those nations as blank holes, there may be parts of our world where there is more poverty or more struggle. Those are often, by the way, countries that have their own oppressive histories. And the people impacted, the people who are suffering in some of those nations, number one, didn't choose their fate in that particular way. We also have a history in this country of saying, we welcome everybody, and we don't just welcome the elites or the nobles, whether you are from Ghana or Norway or wherever. We don't just welcome the scientists and the high achievers. We believe in the potential of every person given true equality to achieve at a high level, but we don't set that standard for whether or not we want you here. And that's something that I, at least on the educational system, I can say, Howard, I was taught that early on. Uh-huh. I was taught that this country is supposed to be about celebrating the potential of the individual, not just saying, well, you are from Ghana, but you are a doctor, so you're welcome here. Mm-hmm. I mean, that whole blank hole stuff, I take Howard's point on that. Reverend, where else do you want to take the conversation there?
Well, certainly we don't have to go only in that direction. We can just stop and look in our own country and look in our own state, our own county, and our own city. We're faced with institutional, structural, individual racism as we look with the whole issue of poverty, the whole issue of employment and better housing. You look at the same likely suspects that have been poor educational system. We have the same likely suspects who have been in power for a long time, and decades have gone by, and the kind of lack of progress. We've been put on a 15-year hold in terms of poverty initiatives for poor people. And just heard the other day, and I don't know if it's true, but $5 million came into this community, and it's rumored that it's only $2.6 million left. So if somebody can help me foil what happened to the 2.4 and who got that and who's bound to get the remainder of the 2.6, I certainly can bet that folk who are poor, where the money was intended to go, hasn't quite reached that. So we don't have to go very far with just Washington, D.C., but we can look around our nation and see that people are not making any more money than they made yesterday. It's the conditions are the same, the issues are the same. And what Saturday will give us an opportunity to do is to put up or shut up. And I think we need to stand together on the issue of what is right here. And I think there was a quote that we used from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "We are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today, and we are confronted with a fierce urgency of now." So we have an opportunity as a community. And a lot of people have been talking about what we need to do and only if we had opportunity. Well, Minister Franklin Florence Sr. Gave us that challenge. He gave us that opportunity. And certainly we want to show ourselves that it can be done. And we've waited too long, I think. Yes, sir. And I think it's time for us to stand together. It's a united response. And I wanted to say this, too, is that it's not only the person, Donald Trump, but it's the people who support his policies that we know are directly aimed to go against poor people, people of color, and we need to say it like it is, against black people, against Latino people, and Native Americans. And those are the people, along with others, who are doing so poorly in our nation. And the few that slip through, they seem like they forget where they come from. Instead of reaching back and bringing people along, that's happening selectively. And the movement that we want to have on Saturday is trying to bring everybody in together. And I want to say to all the churches, as president of the Faith Community Alliance, I'm asking countywide that all churches produce your 100 people, the churches in the city produce your 100 people, because this is a chance where we can put faith into action, because the word says faith without action is dead by itself.
Well, let me just add one point here. If we're looking at the allegations of institutional racism. There was a case in 1989 known as the Central Park Five, in which five young black men were wrongfully convicted of raping a woman jogging in New York City.
Yes.
Donald Trump led the public charge against them. Yes. He took out a full-page newspaper ad, essentially implicitly calling for their death. They were wrongly convicted.
Yes.
He has never apologized for that. And so now he's got someone like Rob Porter in the White House, in which he wants due process. And by the way, I'm all for due process. I'm all for due process for everybody. He wants the president wants due process for Rob Porter after these allegations of Rob Porter's exes showing pictures of black eyes that they say that he administered to them. The president was defensive of Rob Porter. So he's a good guy. He's done good work, and he wants, you know, he wants due process. Who do you want due process for? And are you selective? That is one of the allegations against this president there. So if we're looking institutionally, is justice applied equally or just to those in power? Now, let me also ask this question here. Larry, when it comes to what the minister just said about the supporters of this president, do you view some supporters of Donald Trump as supporting him in good faith? In other words, do you truly believe that anyone who supports this president is de facto racist?
Well, no, not everybody.
Okay.
But I think it's there's a lot of people voting against their own interests. And I think, you know, something Dr. King talked about in his, you know, 1968 when he started his camp, you know, the Poor People's Campaign, which is, you know, continuing now again this year, Reverend Barber, is that, you know, what binds us all together oftentimes is economic interests. So there are people who are white who are poor and who are black who are poor who are both being hurt by these policies of this president. But with his rhetoric and with, you know, and this is not just beginning with him, but he's like the you know, the tip of the spear of this, of turning many of those folk who would normally, and if they knew the economic, you know, reasonings behind, you know, the actions that this president is taking, would realize he is not helping me. But because this president has decided to put us against each other, you know, around race and gender, has got many of those folk who are his supporters who felt a certain anger during the campaign, his populist message about fighting back against the billionaires, although he brought in half and Goldman Sachs with them into the administration. They don't realize or they don't see that. Yes, while he's yelling about all these, you know, and giving this, you know, these winks and these nods to all these brown and black people that have damaged our country, he's hurting them economically also, just as much as, you know, their black or brown neighbor or somebody who maybe lives a county over from them that has the same economic, if not worse, circumstances than they do as a white person. And he has done a very good job of leading them and continuing to help them be blind to that. And those people that are supporting him, and a lot of them don't have the, you know, understanding or don't want to have the understanding maybe sometimes of his policies not helping them out, not helping them at all. Now, there are also some that are just straight out racist. I mean, if you go to Stormfront and other racist websites, you know, or 4chan or Reddit, they love him. And he gives, and he, him and supporters of his, the people he has hired, have given enough nods and winks to them to say, yeah, we got your back and you got our back. There's a lot of people like that. I mean, it's a lot more than Pat Buchanan had. It's a lot more than other right-wing candidates have had. I mean, he became president, you know, acknowledging the support of those kind of people. And, I mean, that's a large number. It's not like a fringe, like, you know, that many candidates have. It's a large number that's supporting him for those reasons.
So I need to, if I can, speak to this point briefly. This is a very critical question that you just asked. First, I want to mention, in terms of the 1989 Central Park case, what people really ought to understand is after those young people had been exonerated through DNA tests, as late as 2016, Trump was still articulating his belief that they were guilty. So that's deep stuff. But this question that you just asked that the minister had raised about individuals as opposed to institutional racism, what we must understand, this is critical. The three major forms of racism, individual, institutional, and structural, that structural, the form that was built right into the economic, political, cultural, dominant cultural system from day one, are inseparable from one another. You can't continue to have institutional racism and structural racism without individual racists. We don't want to say that. So your question was, are the people who did support Trump and still support him de facto, and that term is critical, de facto, it means in fact. Mm-hmm. Are they de facto racist? Yes, absolutely. There's no logical argument against it. If we say Trump is racist, and we do say that, we do. Not everybody does, but we can prove it. There's tons of proof. I don't know why we would even debate it. It's ludicrous to even debate it. But if we say he's racist and you support a racist, how can you not be racist? So that's the education that we need to have. That's the deep education we need to have and so forth. You may think you're not, as many people believe they're not, but de facto, in fact, you are.
But Larry, your initial response to that question is that not everyone who supported him is de facto racist. Do you disagree with Howard on this?
Well, it's interesting. I guess, you know, I don't want to become like Bill Clinton here, but what the definition of the word is, but I guess, you know, how you look at de facto. But yeah, I really believe that, you know, he's a racist. And, you know, like if the Klan, if David Duke, when David Duke was running for office and you voted for him in Louisiana, you were obviously a racist because, you know, he was a Klan member, right? He was the head of the Klan. And he was also a strong supporter of this president. And the president even acted like he didn't know who he was, you know, craziness. So, I mean, yeah, the president isn't wearing a Klan hat necessarily, so it's not as obvious, but the policies and support are the same. So, I mean, it's, you know, I have friends, you know, it's interesting to get into debates. Not that Facebook's always the best place to have debates. But, you know, for people that I know and like, and it's like, why are you, you know, arguing with me about this, about Trump? I mean, it's kind of obvious, I see, and I thought you were a rational person, you know, about his policies and the fact that he's a racist. And they are blind, or maybe it's from a lack of education. And I don't mean like formal education, but just being aware that, you know, how obvious it is to us in this room. And there are people that are literally, there's a lot of irrational people that don't get it and that, you know, oftentimes are online and other places. But there are really rational people that don't get it. And that goes back, I think, to what Howard was saying of the deepness of and the conversation that needs to be had and is somewhat being had in our community, but needs to be had in a deeper manner in our country, that you could be blind to that and not realize it and not see. And even the makeup of his administration, when the highest ranking African American is Omarosa, who after she leaves is on a reality show. That's the quality of people that you're bringing in. And the fact that, you know, his nominees for judge are like 98.5% white, you know, and not that, you know, you compare him to other Republican presidents. I mean, yes, they weren't as diverse, but at least there was a nod to it on somehow occasion. And you decide to put Ben Carson as the head of HUD, you know, and because he was black and he lived in public housing. So those kind of things, which is the not as obvious race stuff. And then there's just the very obvious racial stuff, you know, the slur against the president about, you know, being a foreigner, the birther movement that this president led, you know, and had to halfway apologize for. So there's enough out there. And then even going back to the 70s with lawsuits against him and his father for discriminating against African Americans and Hispanics in his housing. Yeah. So there's a long, long history, and it's pretty obvious to a lot of people.
All right, so I want to remind our listeners why we're here. Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., there is a public rally that is being organized by a number of the community groups that we've been mentioning today, but led by Reverend Florence, and it's at the Central Church of Christ, which is right down near the central public safety building in Rochester. 1 to 3 p.m. if you want to join that event on Saturday afternoon. And I'm late for our only break of the hour, but I want to open up our conversation. Listeners, you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to welcome anyone who wants to join the conversation, no matter what side of sort of the political aisle or whom or you do or do not support. Please let us know what you think, and we'll come right back with our guests for the hour. Minister Florence, president of the Faith Community Alliance. Larry Knox is a political and community engagement coordinator for 1199 SEIU. And Howard Eagle, a representative of the Take It Down Planning Committee and the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry and Action. We're right back next. Coming up in our second hour, think of the busiest road that you use regularly. And I'm not talking about the highway, but a roadway. Now, think about this. What would it take to reduce the traffic on that road? Your first thought might be to add lanes. But studies show that reducing lanes and increasing the shoulder actually tends to reduce accidents and traffic while paving the way for more pedestrians and bicyclists. It's called a road diet. We'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A number of people weighing in online here. Jen on Twitter says, Connections on WXXI is on point today. Great discussion and essential listening for Rochester. And Benjamin says, what is terrible is that since the president began running for office, people who are racist have clearly become more comfortable sharing racist views. We are going in the wrong direction. That is from Benjamin. And I think Howard and Larry raised the point earlier. It is true that despite the fact that tens of millions of people who voted for this president don't identify with the alt-right, and I am not painting with that brush, the alt-right itself, white supremacists, white nationalists, have become much more vocal and much more comfortable saying that they have a president that they support. Not in every way, but in many ways, more than we have seen, at least in my lifetime. So let me get a phone call. I want to bring in Tim Sheafin, who is a small business owner in the greater Rochester area. And Tim is someone, I think, voted for this president. Is that right, Tim?
Yep, I voted for him.
All right. So I know you've had a chance to listen. What do you make of the discussion so far? And have your views on this president changed at all since his time in office?
Well, let me be very careful with the words I choose. The president was someone who represented a change that myself and many people who did vote for him felt we needed in this country. That was pre-election. Now, listening to some of the comments since he's been elected that he's made, certainly I'm embarrassed at what I hear. I'm disappointed in some of the comments that have been reported that he said. But like everything in my life, I want to know all the details. I want to know the context. I want to know the terminology. I want to know who was in the room. You know, did this man just have a bad, poor choice of words, or is he, you know, a dyed, true, proven racist? You know, I'm ready to say that I know that answer. And I disagree with some of the prior conversation on the show. You know, I can't tell you whether I'm a racist or not. You should talk to people who know me, people who interact with me, people who I work with, speak with, trust, love, share company with. Those are the people that are going to tell you whether Tim Sheafin is a racist or not. And based on my interactions and the people I have in my circle of friends, I certainly don't feel like I'm a racist. I don't make racial comments. I don't use slurs. Now, you have to remember, I'm 53 years old. I'm a white man. I've grown up in a rural community. It could be very easy for me to be a racist, but I think I was raised better than that. And I think because I'm a good Christian, I live my life by the golden rule. And there's other adages that come into play there. It doesn't cost nothing to be nice. You know, maybe if you got something bad to say, you should keep your mouth shut. You know, those are the type of values that were instilled with me. And what goes on in my head stays in my head. And my actions and my words are very carefully chosen because I don't want to offend people. And I don't want to label people. And I don't want to judge people harmfully. I was taught the only person that should judge someone is the Lord. And I live my life by some advice that I picked up from a very wise man. I judge people by the content of their character. And that's how I feel as a patriot and as a citizen. Would I vote for Trump again? Probably not, but I would choose someone who represented the same things that I thought he represented before he was elected.
All right, so Tim, hang in there. Thank you for taking the time to call the program. I'm going to go around the table. I'm going to force the mic on Larry first. Larry, go ahead.
Well, I appreciate what Tim said. I mean, I think there's a lot of, I think people that do have, I believe that there's a lot of people that have second thoughts about their vote for Trump, maybe hoping that, you know, he would become a different person. I've heard the claim before the presidency, you know, reveals even more of who you are. It doesn't change who you are, you know, and it's obviously revealed him more of who you are. I guess the one thing that just kind of popped in my head, what are some of the comments that he said that you thought you needed more context on? Do you feel the president is a racist, I guess is what I would ask.
I think Tim is saying he wants to hear more context, but he's not hearing enough that says he can definitively say this president is a racist.
What comment did he have that he said that seems obviously racist that you felt needed more context, I guess?
Like, Tim?
What are things he said that you felt might be interesting?
Well,
the media may have exaggerated or something.
Specifically, let's go back to the blank hole comment about other countries. Mm-hmm. I've been to the island of Hispaniola. I've been to the country of Haiti. And quite honestly, I might use similar words to describe what I experienced when I visited Haiti. Should I use those words? No, I don't think so. Could different words have been said? Certainly. And now let's take three steps back. If a person desires to come and be part of America, where are they coming from? They're not coming from a highly educated, affluent nation where things are wonderful. They're coming from a war-torn country, a country where poverty is terrible. They're coming to get this dream that all of us enjoy here in the United States. So where else are these people going to come from? They're going to come from underdeveloped nations. They're going to come from oppressed nations. They're going to come from places where they want a better life.
Is there something wrong with that, Tim?
No, that's fantastic. That's the American dream. That's what brought my ancestors here.
But the president is saying he doesn't want those people. You know? Tim, the president is saying he doesn't want people from...
Well, that's what we have been led to believe, he said. Did he just say these nations are crap holes? Or did he go on a tirade about how
you went against the golden rule, my friend.
Well, just go back. Just go back and look online, and you'll see what he said. It's not a secret what he said. It's not a secret. There's no mystery. We don't have to make it up. So many media organizations have recorded his exact comments, so we don't have to debate. Go back, and my number is 752-1426. Tim, can I finish? This is just a suggestion. If you really want to know what the president said, go back and look. The record is there. If you want to call me after you do that, 752-1426. But it's interesting that you say you may call Haiti a blank hole nation. That would lead me to ask you, what do you know about the history of Haiti? How did Haiti become the most underdeveloped country in the Western world? How did that happen? Do you know?
The French oppressed the Haitian people.
Okay, the European
then it
French
with
oppressed
more people
them?
Who oppressed the Haitian people, yeah. And even more people who oppress the Haitian people. And today, I understand that the Clinton Foundation is adding more oppression to the Haitian people. So, you know, why don't we bring the Clintons into this conversation?
Wait a minute.
They're not helping the Haitians like they want to.
Let's have the discussion. So,
If
the French are responsible for the conditions that we see on the island of Haiti today, then why are the French not a blank hole country?
Well, let's talk about Haiti. Why aren't the French back helping Haiti out?
Well, but that's not my point. Why is the president not calling them a blank hole country? All the damage and oppression and exploitation.
We're discussing what might have been said, what could have been said.
Would you call France a blank hole country?
I've never been to France. I don't think I have the right to comment on
it. But you know what they did. You just said you just testified.
Well, the French people oppressed Haiti for years, and I'm aware of that.
And therefore, would you call them a blank hole country because of their actions?
I would call the French people oppressive.
Okay.
Well, Tim, I will say, I don't want to let you off the hook here, because the context of the meeting where he said that was about immigration and it was a meeting about priorities. And Dick Durbin was there about where are we going to, you know, fix this immigration issue. And Durbin had brought up, you know, Haiti and other countries as places where they want to address the numbers and all that. And that's when he said the statement. So the whole meeting, and this is like all reported even on Fox News everywhere, that the context of the meeting where he said these comments was about priorities for immigration and where we're going to have people coming in. And that's where he said that statement. So I think that context is very important because it's very clear and it's not controversial about why he said it, because the context of the meeting was about immigration from certain countries, and that was his response.
My opinion of why he said it would be because he's ignorant.
We certainly wouldn't argue with that, but we would take your argument.
My father once told me, don't judge another person till you walk a mile in his shoes. I doubt Mr. Trump can even get into a pair of those shoes, and I feel sorry for the man. I have pity for someone who can't walk around in someone else's shoes. And that's the type of person I am. I'm not going to judge someone based on what I hear. I want to get inside that person's brain and try to figure out why they can't understand something so apparent. Why couldn't this man understand that people from Netherlands don't want to move to the United States? It's the people from the poor, the oppressed, the underprivileged, the war-ravaged countries. Those are the people who want to come and experience American dream. And I don't think that's ever changed. I don't think that's changed.
We want to invite you, Tim, to our event this Saturday, the 17th at 1 o'clock p.m.
I would be honored to come on the 17th.
Please introduce yourself.
I agree that racism has gone on too long. And I once said to Evan, we should have treated it like we should have treated the metric system. We should have thrown away the inch and embraced the centimeter. Why can't we throw away racism and stop doing it?
Well, one reason we won't do that is because of the white pathology that is never studied. Every group of people on the face of the earth, some type of research has been done on them and why they think and act and do certain things. The pathology that you just expressed as a white person needs to be studied to make us understand why do you think the way you think about Haiti. Oh, yeah. And if for you to be able to articulate clearly without hesitation, without stuttering, that you possibly would use the same terminology. That's similar, white pathology. Similar. So that means that you and Donald Trump possibly have never met, but you have the same approach, the same mentality. You just said it. You just said it.
I respectfully disagree with you.
But you just said it.
I understand why it was referred to.
Reverend, let's let Tim respond and then we'll continue the conversation.
Needs to understand, we're talking about his words. We're not pulling something out of the sky. It was you who said that you would refer to Haiti as a black hole country.
I've been to Haiti.
And you said that, right? You said you
wouldn't want to live there. I would desire to be somewhere else.
That's the pathology, sir. That's the pathology.
If I lived in Haiti, I would desire to move too.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about your comment that you would refer to Haiti as a blank hole country. You said that.
It's a mess. Huh? It's a mess there. Have you been there?
No, that's not the point. I'm asking you.
It is the point. Have you been there?
The point? No, I have not been there.
Well, you need to go there. The place is awful.
Everybody from Haiti,
those people.
Listen, everybody from Haiti is not uneducated, underdeveloped,
and so
forth.
No, there's wonderful, loving, caring people in Haiti. They
smart, intelligent people, scientists, lawyers, doctors.
Those people deserve a better place to be. And if they can make it themselves with our help, I'm willing to help.
I want to talk about your comment that you would refer to Haiti as a blank hole.
I'm telling you about my comment. The place is terrible. I would not want to live there.
That's why you were referred to it as a blank hole country?
They don't have running water even available to their homes. They don't have proper sanitation. They don't have proper infrastructure. They don't have proper healthy drinking water. They don't have safe places to go. They don't have trees in their yard. They don't have flowers growing out of their ground. I've been to Haiti. It's a lousy place.
Yeah, because of this president's policies, Puerto Rico's on the same way there, too. And this is
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with it. Puerto Rico is a territory, and they can help themselves with our help.
Yeah, but you know the president.
I don't agree with that.
You're coming to our event on Saturday.
You got
to
be there Saturday.
Event on Saturday.
I would love to meet both of you.
Please, we want to talk with you more on Saturday. We don't want to have this discussion and take away from the intent of our being here, which is to promote the event that we're having this Saturday at 1 o'clock p.m. at 101 South Plymouth Avenue at the Central Church of Christ, right across the street from the Public Safety Building. Please introduce yourself when you come, and hopefully we can develop a relationship and do what Evan has suggested to us in the beginning. Maybe come to some common ground in terms of understanding what this is all about and how we're going to change it.
I wish you all the support in the world. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Tim, last question before I'll let you go. I actually see the part that this conversation got hung up on was the president's alleged remarks about these other countries. Tim, I take the point that you're making, having been to Haiti, and I hear you saying a very different thing than what President Trump said. In other words, if the president said, and apparently I don't think the White House has at least denied the substance of his remarks saying, well, why not Norway? Why do we want people from X country and Y country and Z country? Tim, you seem to be saying, no, we should be understanding that, of course, those are the people who would want to be in this country and be welcoming. I think that's what I'm hearing from you.
Thank you for a proper hearing.
Okay. But I also hear you saying you disagree that this administration's policies toward Puerto Rico have been structurally different than they would be towards, say, Florida or Texas, where there have also been disasters and the level of relief in many eyes has been different. You don't see a difference there, or you see a justification.
I don't know enough about what has happened to either areas to be any kind of expert. However, it is an island territory. It's much more difficult to get things there. And there's a lot of policies that were in place that apparently we aren't aware of with who can and who cannot unload at the port. I think that's bogus. But let's face it. If New York State has a catastrophe, who responds first? Your neighbor, your loved ones, your friends. Who responds second? The state. The local people, the infrastructure that's in place in your state. Who responds third? The federal government. That's what we expect of them.
We had a panel in this community for 110 years that was up on a carousel, and people knew it was up there. Let's don't go to Haiti. Let's stay right here in Rochester.
Okay, but Minister, and I do take that point, but what I don't understand, Tim, I don't understand the point you're making. Are you saying that it's up to Puerto Ricans to help themselves and that they are failing themselves first?
And that's how did it become a territory. That's what we need to look at.
From what I've seen in the media, structural. It looks like there's a lack of coordination between those people in Puerto Rico and those people at the federal level.
Come on.
Now, somehow the two of them have to get their crap together and progress can be made. So let's get to the root of that problem on a different show.
We got to look at the history if you really want to get to the root of the problem. How does Puerto Rico end up as it is today? How does it become a territory of the United States and so forth? How did that happen?
Why aren't they a state? Let's give them statehood.
No, I'm asking you. Do you know the history?
I'd love for them to be a state.
Do you know the history?
I could take a minute and think back in my brain on how Puerto Rico became a territory.
If you
want
to understand what's going on, you have to take a minute.
It had something to do with Teddy Roosevelt in the Battle of San Juan Hill.
Those are elements. I'm talking about the total history. You have to understand how Puerto Rico became to be what it is today. And if you understand that history, then you will also understand the conditions that you see today. And you will also understand who's responsible for creating those conditions and maintaining them and who's profiting from those conditions, even as we sit here talking.
I'd love to save the world, but unfortunately, I'm one man.
We don't want to save the world. Let's do some work in Rochester.
Let's be kind to each other.
Let's be kind,
let's do some work.
Let's
stop racism right at the gate. I taught my kids to be kind.
No. See, that's where you're really mistaken. You can't stop racism at the gate by being kind.
Well, he says he taught his kids to be colorblind.
Well, that's bad. That's trouble. Because if your kids don't see my color, we got a problem.
Hold on. I think everybody has equal goals here. But, Howard, you said it's bad that Tim taught his kids to be colorblind.
Absolutely. It is backwards, Tim. If you teach your children, excuse me, Tim, you won't let me speak.
I taught my children that everyone I know, regardless of race, creed, or color, is my friend.
All right, Listen, Tim, let Howard respond.
Go ahead,
Howard.
Let me tell you what my comment is about being colorblind. I know many white people say that, and they believe they're making a progressive statement. They're trying to be kind, as you said, and so forth. But I have dark skin, and my children have dark skin, and my grandchildren and my cousins, aunts, uncles have dark skin. If you're telling me that you don't see our skin color, then you don't see part of us. And that's a problem right from the beginning. We're not invisible people. We're not opaque. We are brown. We are black. We are, you understand? We want you to see that because that is a part of us. That is a part of our humanity. So to teach your children that, in my view, as an educator, is a mistake on your part. And I would advise you to try to undo that. But I would be willing to talk with you more about why I say these kinds of things, right? So that's part of what keeps the confusion going, is that often when we think we're doing what's, you know, correct, politically correct, I guess you would say, we're causing more damage. And we don't talk about it. We don't get an opportunity to really talk about it, to discuss it at a deep level so that we can come to an understanding. Because you may be thinking, well, who is this black guy? He must be crazy telling me that I'm wrong to teach my children to be colorblind. But I'm not saying that off the top of my head.
Okay, go ahead, Tim.
I respect you, and I think you have a valid opinion. However, I think if you met either one of my children and it didn't know who they were, you would think they were wonderful, kind, loving people because they don't look at your skin color first. They get to know you.
If your children tell me that they don't see my skin color, that's a problem. So that's all I'm saying.
I'm sure they'll understand what color you are. But I think they'll get to know you before they.
Well, then they can't understand what color I am without looking at my skin color. But that's beside the point. Really, what is the work that is to be done if we are serious about impacting racism in all of its forms, individually, institutionally, and structurally? That's the critical question. That's why we're gathering on Saturday, to take a stand against racism, but hopefully to move toward working together to impact it. It's not going to just go away magically. It's not because we stopped talking about it or because we're being nice. That's not going to end it.
Not at all.
Now, Tim, I would say, too, I appreciate you calling in and talking with us. And these are conversations that need to be had because I think the president has done a lot of damage. So, you know, he's not going to change who he is. And he's just going to continue you know, on the track that he is, because, you know, he's a 7-year-old, 5-year-old man, or however old he is, he's not going to change. But I think, you know, for us to continue these kind of conversations, for you that as somebody that was or, you know, had voted for Trump, and for others, you know, and your friends and neighbors and family that also, and kind of realize at the very least, no matter where we agree or disagree, that, okay, things are off track, and it's because of this presidency. I mean, I think a lot of people thought racism was over after President Obama won, including some of us, I think.
And you need to promise that you're going to bring 100 people, because if you feel so committed about what needs to be done, and I didn't mean to cut in on my friend, I just had to bring that in, is that why are you on the air? Why don't you make a pledge that you're going to bring 100 people?
That's a lot of people, Reverend.
Yeah, bring 100 people. Bring
I will tell more than 100 people about your event and encourage them to come.
Tim, I
promise you that.
And we'll see you there, right?
I'll do my best to be there, and I'll come and introduce myself.
Tim, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to call. I appreciate it, Tim.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me spew the rhetoric about the golden rule. It's a wonderful policy.
Yeah, those who have the gold rule.
All right, Tim Schieffen is a local small business owner. I appreciate that, Tim. And before we lose the hour, Reverend, please let the audience know, Saturday, one more time, the details so they can understand if they want to plan for it.
Yes, that's Saturday, February 17th, 2018, 1 p.m., Central Church of Christ, 101 South Plymouth, across the street from the Public Safety Building. We're standing together by spreading the word, and we want to share and invite all people to talk about Donald Trump's ongoing hatred and racism. Everybody's welcome.
Thank you all for being here, and again, thanks for those who called or shared their thoughts. I know there is a lot of heat around this discussion, and what the guests here are saying is no matter what your background. In fact, if you disagree with some of what you've heard, they're going to be there, and they want to talk to you on Saturday. Thank you, Minister Florence, for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Howard Eagle, thank you for being here.
Thank you, listeners.
Thanks, sir. Larry Knox, nice to see you. Thanks for being here as well. Short break. More Connections coming up.